Ran across something yesterday evening on the internet that has to do with biblical such and such and such and such. And there are a few people who are commentators that I follow in part because they're Jewish. And some of their insights into the Old Testament are other than I noticed. This one, yesterday evening. The guy's name is Dennis Prager, addressing the question of why does the Bible refer to God as He? Okay, some of the other things he says are definitely wrong, but this one was an interesting insight that the Bible had three choices: he, she, it. Just cross off it because, first off, the Hebrew language doesn't have a neuter. And secondly, because we relate to a personal God. And that relating to a personal God is necessary. So why then he rather than she? And I'm going to try and short-circuit, not go through his little detours all over the place. But in the interest of a good world, when the heart of man is continually set in him to do evil, setting up the revelation as saying God is he, and then bringing in some of the personal characteristics of God: mercy, compassion, love, kindness, care for the helpless. Now, if that was set up as the goddess, men who are, and especially young men who are, the biggest problem in this world with violence and treating others poorly would say, oh, that's just a feminine characteristic. But if you set it up as God, he, and then say, these are the traits, mercy, kindness, compassion, care for the weak, then you're saying to the young men, these are, well, they must be male characteristics as well. And therefore you have an image of God that the young man does not ignore, but says, oh, that's part of what it means to be a man. And so it addresses straight into where the problem exists. And that's a line of thought that I had never run into. I collect lines of thought that I'd never run into. So, okay. But the Bible does say he. And why is that? You have some running around saying that God is actually masculine. And the reply has been, from the early church all the way to our day, and this Dennis Prager as well says this, no, God is not of one or the other gender. He transcends gender. He is spirit. He is not corporeal. He's not a man.
Except in Jesus.
But he's not a man. He's a spirit. Okay? Now, that has been standard theology since, well, it goes way back into the Old Testament. So the use of he is not of necessity. It is a choice made by God in his revelation. So we begin to explore, why is that choice made? And that's the point of interest in that little tidbit. Okay? Shall we get back into a whole lot of water? Genesis 7.
Yeah, one wonders.
Pick up at verse 11. In the 600th year of Noah's life, in the second month, on the 17th day of the month. So there were 12 months all the way back then. On that day, all the fountains of the great deep burst forth, and the windows of the heavens were open. Verse 12.
And rain fell on the earth 40 days and 40 nights.
On the very same day, Noah and his sons Shem and Ham and Japheth, and Noah's wife and the three wives of his sons with them, entered the ark. So when God said, yet 7 days, the 7 days was spent gathering the animals, getting everything set. And then finally, when everything's set, Noah and his family with him enters the ark, and it's sealed up. And on that day, it begins to rain.
No children.
Yeah. Right.
Probably baby animals.
No, and that's...
Yeah, no, for them, yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. On the very same day, Noah and his sons, Shem and Ham and Japheth, and Noah's wife and his... Oh. Okay, verse 14.
They had with them every wild animal according to its kind, all livestock according to their kinds, every creature that moves along the ground according to its kind, and every bird according to its kind, everything with wings.
Okay. They went into the ark with Noah, two and two of all flesh in which there was the breath of life. Verse 16.
And those that entered, male and female, of all flesh, went in as God had commanded him, and the Lord shut him in.
So it is God who does the final sealing. Interesting.
Scary.
Seal them up. Probably pitch.
Locked in here. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Better be in here than out there.
Okay, verse 17. The flood continued 40 days on the earth. The waters increased and bore up the ark, and it rose high above the earth. There is an interesting display down in Kentucky at the Ark Encounter, where they set up the other flood stories in other cultures from the ancient world. And they depict the ark according to those stories. That one is a cube. What would happen in a flood with a cube?
Flip-toss it around.
Tumbling, yeah. Now, and on and on and on it goes. And they do a little demonstration. I've heard this done in print before, that the proportions of the ark were, they were right for the ark being stable. Some of the things they show are, with this design of an ark, here it is splitting in half. Everybody dies. Here's an ark, but it's not that stable, and so everybody's tossed around inside. And then they show those inside getting really battered and injured, and so they die.
Oh, elephants down below.
Yeah. Well, it was interesting because the cultures of the ancient world, they all had ark stories, but they depicted the ship from their cultural perspective. And so... They had a little video of, okay, so we're going to do this ship. Now this is when the waves come. Now this is what happens to the ship. And they went through all five of them, and then they showed the ark just kind of going going along.
So the whole ancient world in the Middle East or beyond?
Beyond.
Extending how far?
Well, the Americas.
Yeah. There are arc stories among the American Indians. It seems to be a worldwide story, which is one of the things that is quite remarkable about this.
Quite compelling that the Ark existed.
Okay. Where are we?
17? 18.
Okay. Let's do it.
The waters prevailed and increased greatly on the earth, and the ark floated on the face of the waters.
Ah. And verse 19.
It rose greatly on the earth, and all the high mountains under the entire heavens were covered.
Ah. And 20.
The waters prevailed above the mountains, covering them, 15 cubits deep.
Okay. So, we do not know whether mountains were not as high, what else happened, and on and on and on. There are theories about the extinction of the dinosaurs that talk about a comet and striking the earth and the waters sweeping over the land. We don't know whether there was an involvement of a comet. We just don't know those things. There are certain things that have been found that are quite interesting, such as in the mountains of Western Canada, there are mass graves of animals and fish mixed together.
Slammed up against a wall. Well, that's in Montana or something.
No. Mass graves of animals and fish mixed together. One that just came through on Facebook recently that I found interesting with the brief detour into having a nasty cold and upper respiratory blah, 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 pointed out the curious posture of animals in the fossil remains, many of them with the neck and head arched way back. And some medical doctor points out that this is very often the posture you will find in an animal that has suffocated or drowned. Because by tilting the head way back, you're trying to open up the air passage and get more air in, as I was doing a couple nights ago in bed. And it's fascinating how many of the fossils you actually do see in that posture. And you go,
Well, 15 cubits above Mount Everest is quite a ways up there.
Yeah. Yep, if Mount Everest was that high at that point.
Right.
Which is...
My study Bible says that that probably was a fact given by God, not by Noah taking a measurement.
Well, yeah.
15 cubits. I mean, how would Noah know that?
Hey, hold on to me, Shem. I'm gonna.
Have you ever read Mark Twain's Life on the Mississippi, talking about the paddle wheel boats?
Yeah.
And how they would take the newbies, and your first time in the wheelhouse steering, and then somebody calls for a depth measurement, and. What they do is they do the sounding of the depth, and you give fake depths. What do they call it? Knots. You know, 10 knots, 5 knots.
Fathoms. Knots is speed.
Fathom. Oh, okay, fathom. But
Lots of speed.
And they bring it down and down and down and down, so you make the kid in the wheelhouse think he's running into ground on a sandbar and listen to him panic. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Just sounding the depth. It's an entertaining little vignette from that writing.
How many feet did yours say?
Mine says 15.
15 cubits.
Mine just said 20 feet.
That's,
yeah, that's roughly.
Depends on how you measure your cubit again.
Did we say it was?
Yeah. And whose cubit is it?
18 times 15.
Whoever they drop down.
Yeah. Yeah, which whosever arm it is, yeah. Right?
Well, they'd measure on the rope and tie knots on the rope, and you'd have a weight on the end. Okay. So, let's see, verse 21.
Every living thing that moved on the earth perished. Birds, livestock, wild animals, all the creatures that swarm over the earth, and all mankind.
Mm-hmm. Everything on the dry land in whose nostrils was the breath of life died. 23.
Every living thing on the face of the earth was wiped out. People and animals and the creatures that move along the ground. And the birds that were wiped from the earth. Only Noah and was left, and those were with him on the ark.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And the waters prevailed on the earth, how long?
150 days.
Is that from after the 40 days of rain, or is it measuring from the beginning of the 40 days of rain?
Mm-hmm.
Don't know.
371 days.
So, we've got half a year going by. Chapter 8, then, verse 1.
But God remembered Noah and all the beasts and all the livestock that were with him in the ark. And God made the wind blow over the earth, and the waters subside.
Okay. So the wind blows, the waters begin to evaporate back into the atmosphere. And this is just beginning. Verse 2.
The fountains of the deep and the windows of heavens were closed. The rain from the heavens was restrained.
Okay. So it's not letting loose. And waters return to the, what do you call it, underground water?
Reservoirs.
No.
Now
the water table's under the ground. There's a word for it that I can't remember.
Say
the aquifers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Give it to the farmer.
And so there has been, because the aquifers are beginning to take in the water again, was the dry land lowered for that time being, and now it begins to resume being open and having water possible to be under the ground? All kinds of questions that we do not know the answers to. But you know, if all of these things are possibilities put in play, then you could have a flood that did cover the entire earth.
Well, it said the fountains of the deep were opened and the water came out. So imagine,
mm-hmm.
They say there's a huge aquifer under Yellowstone.
Well, under the Great Plains.
Yeah, under the Great Plains. Ogallala. If all that water came up.
Ogallala.
Ogallala, aquifer under Nebraska.
Yes, which is huge.
And it would
What would happen if the if the land above that suddenly subsided, and that was above the ground.
You like where they drill water wells and you have it subsides a little bit.
Yeah. Okay, so this is all speculation, by the way. We're guessing.
But there's all kinds of shellfish and creatures and like coral, what is it?
Mm-hmm.
Coralville, Iowa? All kinds of shellfish and creatures from sea.
Mm-hmm.
And like the petrified forest in Arizona.
Right.
There are geologically drawings of the United States that's mostly covered by water. And that's taken from the presence of sea creatures far inland. Okay, where are we? Verse 4?
Three.
Okay.
Water receded steadily from the earth. At the end of the 150 days, the water had gone down.
Mm-hmm. And now verse 4.
And on the 17th day of the seventh month, the ark came to rest on the mountains of Ararat.
Okay, so now we have identifiable places that are not renamed because of the flood scrambling all of the geology and all of the place names. Ararat is Ararat, and Ararat is in eastern Turkey.
And Noah's Ark National Park is in Turkey.
But,
if you Google Earth it.
Found remains.
Yeah.
Of the Ark. Oh, there. Okay.
Yeah, you can kind of see the Ark. If you want to take it and pass it, but touch it so that it doesn't go dark. I was busy Google Earthing on this.
Okay. So the...
And it must have been some dandy wood to this day, have remnants found.
Well, most of what they found is the metal that would have been the slats in the hall and stuff. They've taken a metal detector over it and they found regular metal in regular intervals.
Wow.
Okay,
in the national park.
Okay. Now
it's not up on top of the mountain, though it's down. It
yeah,
was kind of
things do slide. But
well, and the Earth's surface has changed.
Mm-hmm.
And it's constantly changing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, over the years.
There it is. I got it.
Oh yeah.
That looks the shape of an arc, doesn't it?
That's a good pause. Mm-hmm. Yep.
The Turkish people have named it that. It's their national park.
Yeah.
Bring in verse 5.
The waters continued to recede until the 10th month, and on the first day of the 10th month, the tops of the mountains became visible.
Ah. It's a lot of water to have recede, huh?
About 20 feet.
Yeah.
Yeah. Verse 6.
After 40 days, Noah opened the window he had made in the ark.
And sent forth a raven, it went to and fro until the waters were dried up from the earth. Okay. Verse 8.
Then he sent forth a dove from him to see if the waters had subsided from the face of the ground.
Verse 9.
But the dove found no place to set her foot. And she returned to him to the ark, for the waters were still on the face of the whole earth. So he put out his hand and took her and brought her into the ark with him.
Mm-hmm. Okay. He waited another 7 days. And again he sent forth the dove out of the ark, verse 11.
When the dove returned to him in the evening, there in his beak was a freshly plucked olive leaf. Then Noah knew that the water had receded from the earth.
Okay. So not only does the water have to be down enough that you can set your foot on the ground, it has to be down enough so that when he lets the animals out of the ark, they can go and find something to eat other than each other.
Not sitting in the mud.
yeah. So it's a good plan to keep everything in place while the waters keep on going down until the animals can get out and forage for themselves. Something has to be growing, and so he has to wait.
It'd be a great day to get out from confinement after a
moment. Yeah.
Actually, it seems like it went down pretty quickly.
Mm-hmm. Verse 12.
And he waited another 7 days and sent forth a dove, and she did not return to him anymore.
Okay. So there's enough there that she's content to be out and on her own. And now it's time to let the other animals out. Verse 13.
By the first day of the first month of Noah's 601st year, the water had dried up from the earth. Noah then removed the covering from the ark and saw that the surface of the ground was dry.
Okay, now, happy birthday, Noah.
Yeah.
The covering from the ark, is that kind of roof type thing or something or other?
Well, it said he covered it in pitch.
So no, pitch is tar.
How did he remove that? He had to have his sons helping him.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this 600-year-old guy.
Yeah.
Open the doors.
But he had the roof brought down to a certain height above the sides. And did he then have a covering that was placed over that so that the water would shed from the roof right off?
Hmm.
Again, there are pieces missing. It's a whole lot more complete than the Gilgamesh epic or any of the others around the world. Okay, so let's see. Then God said to Noah, now verse 16.
Go out from the ark, you and your wife and your sons' wives with you.
Okay, so this is the second month and the 27th day of the month. God says this. Verse 17.
Bring out with you every living thing that is with you, all you of all flesh, birds and animals and every creeping thing that creeps on the earth, that they may swarm on the earth and be fruitful and multiply on the earth.
Okay, so the earth is going to be filled again. Okay. So Noah went out and his sons and his wife and his sons' wives with him. Verse 19.
All the animals and all the creatures that moved along the ground and all the birds, everything that moves on the earth came out of the ark, one kind after another.
Okay.
So they were in there a year.
Uh-huh. Yeah. That's a long time, and that's a lot of food and storage and provisions that had to be put away. And now, if God says to Noah, years ahead, to build the ark, now he's giving him enough time to build up this storage. Okay, so we get to the aftermath, verse 20.
Then Noah built an altar to the Lord and took some of every clean animal and some of every clean bird and offered burnt offerings on the altar.
That's going to be a lot of offerings.
Yeah.
Where'd he get the wood?
In the ark.
So at that time, I knew about the cloven hoof. They knew what was clean and what was...
Yeah.
That would be an anachronism defining from the book of Exodus back into the book of Genesis. And we're just not told that.
But we are told he took seven of all the clean. So.
Yeah. There was
a
distinction, and we should assume that the distinction was similar. But we can't assume point by point right down the line.
So this was 600 years after God created the earth.
Huh?
It was 600 years after God created the earth.
Yeah, well that's...
No.
Because Noah was 600.
That's what the ark...
Yeah, Noah was 600 years.
Suggested that they were all asleep. A lot of those animals hibernate. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of people.
So.
Mm-hmm. Is a bear clean or unclean?
I don't know.
How do you get the bear to cooperate?
Bear probably hibernated. Mm-hmm.
Okay, you got God to help you out there.
God, you put sleep on them all. And the other thing they said was likely a lot of the animals on the ark were infants or young animals, because otherwise, pardon?
You probably trained
wise. Yeah.
I just keep remembering that cartoon. I see the two elephants walking off from the ark. That's the worst cruise I've ever been on. It rained every day.
What about? I was thinking about the ones that had to live through that for a year and then get sacrificed the day they get off.
No,
no.
Yay! Why did we live through all that for a year?
No pita back at that time.
Yep. No pita back then.
No
pita.
Yeah. Okay. So, where are we?
People eating tasty animals.
And when the Lord smelled the pleasing aroma, the Lord said in his heart, I will never again curse the ground because of man, for the intention of man's heart is evil from his youth. Neither will I again strike down every living creature as I have done. And as it was before the ark, so it is after the ark. God's assessment of mankind. But he will not, again, send a flood to wipe out all life on the earth. Verse 22 finishes our chapter.
As long as the earth endures, seed time and harvest, cold and heat, summer and winter, day and night will never cease. We've got a note on there from Tim. We now have seasons. But it's interesting, as long as the earth endures.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a possibility the earth can destroy itself or whatever. You know, man.
Well, it will happen by God's hand.
By God, right.
Yeah. Yep.
We'll probably help it along, though. We're good at that.
Yeah.
Doesn't say anything about the rainbow yet.
No, it doesn't.
Mm-mm.
That's still coming. We're not done with the story. But all of these things will continue on, and God will be faithful. Okay?
Chapter 9, verse 1.
And God blessed Noah and his sons and said to them, be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth.
Okay. It's a renewal of the blessing, isn't it?
The original blessing from.
So where's the blessing come from? Where's that those words familiar from?
Genesis.
Genesis what?
2:28.
Huh?
I don't know. 2:28?
No.
Is that where it is?
No. 1:26.
1:26. Well, it's only a chapter and a couple verses off.
Yeah. Okay. So it's the original blessing, right? But then read the next verse.
Fear and dread of you will fall on all beasts of the earth and on all the birds in the sky, on every creature that moves along the ground, and on all the fish in the seas. They are given into your hands.
Okay. What is it that God said back in Genesis 1?
Have dominion over all the...
Oh, have dominion. That's different.
And evidently on the ark, they weren't afraid of the people. Because they knew they were taking care of them and that... going to eat them or kill them or whatever.
Until after
they got off.
I'm going back and seeing whether what the mention is of okay. Interesting. And it does not say before they went into the ark. It says, chapter 6, let's see, verse 19. And of every living thing of all flesh, you shall bring two of every sort into the ark to keep them alive with you. They shall be male and female. Etc., etc., etc. And we speculated whether God removed the fear from them that they would come to Noah. But it doesn't go into detail on that.
I mean, it would be like tame animals, I would assume, or you'd have a riot on the ark, even though they may be babies.
Yeah.
I mean,
but.
I assume they'd have to be, the ones that were awake would have to be hand fed.
I'm looking for anything that says that the fear of Noah was removed from the animals so that they would come to him.
Well, up until that time, they were eating plants and not meat.
They were supposed to. But if you remember back in Genesis 4, it talks about somebody who was a great hunter. So
that could be hunting roots and, seeds.
That would be a great farmer.
But this was of those who were of the line of Cain. That somebody is mentioned as a great hunter.
Because if God is putting the fear and dread of you upon all the beasts and birds and every creature after the ark. It makes it sound like they had no fear for their lives before that.
Right. Okay.
And it says, just as I gave you the green plants, I now give you everything for food.
Yeah. And that was how man was supposed to act. Did those who had completely abandoned God's ways? Did they stick with that?
Apparently not.
Out. Yeah. Yeah. But
probably disobeyed everything.
We're hitting this point because of the change in the blessing from Genesis chapter 1 to Genesis 9. And it is reiterated, but it is altered. So the fear of man, and into your hand they are delivered. And then verse 3, every moving thing that lives shall be food for you. And as I gave you the green plants, I give you everything. Verse 4.
But you must not eat meat that has its lifeblood still in it.
Mm-hmm. And for
so
your...
what is that?
Let's pull in verse...
Do you have to drain it?
Pull in verses 5 yeah. and following. And then we'll go back to that. But verse 5?
And for your lifeblood I will require a reckoning. From every beast I will require it, and from man. From his fellow man I will require a reckoning for the life of man.
Mm-hmm. Verse 6? Whoever sheds the blood of man, by man shall his blood be shed. For God made man in his own image. And, okay. So the regulation became, you are allowed to eat the meat, but, you know, drain the blood. So if you go to a kosher butcher, they're very careful about draining off the blood from the meat before they prepare the meat.
I read a book not too long ago, and it was a novel, you know, not historically correct, but about prehistoric man,
mm-hmm.
and that they would eat grubs and bugs and, you know, leaves and whatever they could find until they came across a kill by another animal. And if it was a fresh kill, and the blood had been drained by whatever killed it, then they would eat the meat.
Hmm. Okay, interesting supposition.
Every moving thing should be food, so that means
and
bugs and snakes. And
an underlying assumption in a lot of that, and in a lot of science as well, and you got to recognize the underlying assumption, is that human beings were very, very ignorant to begin with. And they wandered the earth, and they were just plain dumb. And slowly over time, they evolved and learned a little by little by little by little. And that is not the pattern that Genesis sets forth. Because right from the beginning, they were smart, they were clever. As in, when was the last time you took and tried to sew vegetable leaves together? And with what did you try and sew it? And there, right away, they know how to do this. And so, human beings were not what is depicted by these prehistoric movies.
Right. Well, this was, I don't know if you've heard the book, The Inheritors.
No.
Well, it was a question on Jeopardy, so I had to look up the book and read it. I assumed it was something pretty well known, but I guess not. I'd never heard of it, but it was when Neanderthal man met the higher
okay.
man.
No, I remember the movie. What was it? A Million BC, with Raquel Welch.
Oh, <yeah. laughs>
What was the dialogue in that movie?
You don't remember the dialogue. You remember what she was hearing.
That's the dialogue. Just grunts. And the assumption is there that they hadn't developed language yet.
Yeah. Well, in this book, the prehistoric man, they mentally connected with things and with each other and stuff.
Yeah.
It wasn't that they were grunting at each other.
And human beings lived in trees and didn't dare to come down to the ground until a certain time, and then we evolved and lost our tails.
Oh, no, that wasn't it.
Like, there's a lot of silly running around.
It is interesting. I was looking for my photos that I took of the Ark when we were down. Uh-huh. I took a lot of photos. And I uploaded a lot of photos. And Facebook doesn't have them under my photos.
The one thing I've always wondered about the Ark since we were there.
Really?
Is when it was floating, it worked great.
I looked on the uploads.
You know, it's like when it came to rest...
Mm-hmm.
How did
sure
it work out?
An album?
I looked
as far
at
as
albums.
Emulation and getting rid of, you see what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. All of those things that they had down in Kentucky at the Ark depended on the waves to ventilate the Ark.
Right.
He's got the picture of me and him standing in front of the Ark. And
maybe that's why they removed
the
covering.
But it's missing like all those other
pictures
that I have.
On top they had that was open a little bit so that
what
they could raise vegetables.
I thought about that before. You know, just really
it eliminated a lot of the pictures that I uploaded of the Ark and the different things that they showed why the Ark probably worked.
Anyway.
But
can the Ark, whoever is in charge of that, can they say that you can't?
Facebook
upload the pictures.
No, no. Facebook does a lot of
and Facebook is inconsistent,
editing.
So we don't know.
Yeah.
But we need to get back to this because there's a certain destination here, and we're a few verses away from that. But verse 7 says what?
As for you, be fruitful and increase in number, multiply on the earth and increase upon it.
Okay, so. From verse 1 on to here, you have a restating, a re-giving of the original blessing, but it is modified. And now the animals are living in fear of human beings, and we're eating them.
Everything that creeps on the earth.
Hopefully they're multiplying very fast.
Then God said to Noah and to his sons with him, verse 9.
I now establish my covenant with you and with your descendants after you.
Mm-hmm. And with every living creature that is with you, the birds, the livestock, and every beast of the earth with you, as many as came out of the ark, it is for every beast of the earth. Verse 11.
I establish my covenant with you. Never again with all life will all life be cut off by the waters of a flood. Never again will there be a flood to destroy the earth.
Mm-hmm. And God said, here we go. Ken.
You. 12.
What's that?
12.
This is a sign of the covenant that I will make between you and every living creature that is with you. For all future generations.
Okay. I have set my bow in the cloud, and it shall be a sign of the covenant between me and the earth. And there's the rainbow. Verse 14.
Whenever I bring clouds over the earth and the rainbow appears in the clouds,
I will remember my covenant that is between me and you and every living creature of all flesh, and the waters shall never again become a flood to destroy all flesh. Verse 16.
When the bow is in the clouds, I will see it and remember the everlasting covenant between God and every living creature of all flesh that is on the earth.
Okay. God said to Noah, this is the sign of the covenant that I have established between me and all flesh that is on the earth. Now, a few things to notice, just in general. We are to the end of the account of Noah. And this is much less compacted than Genesis 2 and Genesis 3. There's a lot more detail, and it moves more slowly through the time frame of when things happen. So it's like it's a different pen. And there's the first one, the second one, from Genesis 2 through Genesis 5 is God speak coherently here. Stand up. That helps the blood flow. So the first one was Genesis 1, and we had the 7 days, 6 days of creation, 1 day of rest. After that, these are the accounts of, and these are the generations of, and we had from then through the Garden of Eden, through the leaving the Garden of Eden, and then the genealogies leading up to Noah. And it's very compact and very sparse in the wording. You get into the account of the flood, and a lot more words are used to describe the events. If it was the same as that second section back then, we would have heard about Noah, 600 years, and the flood came, and all life was destroyed, and then God saw Noah in the ark, and then they went out of the ark. Something like that. It would have taken about 4 or 5 verses. So now everything is much more fleshed out. And as we go further in Genesis, things become more and more and more expanded. And that's just the way of it. The style of is different. And actually, we're going to go through the end of chapter 9 with Noah's descendants, and that will be the tail end of the section of the book. And then we will pick up with, these are the generations of the sons of Noah. That's chapter 10, verse 1. But we come now to the end of the account of the flood, and I ask you a little pop quiz. What are the three signs of peace that are given between God and man in the account of the flood, three of them that are still recognized as signs in our day? The dove.
The rainbow. The rainbow.
The rainbow.
And the olive branch.
Oh, the olive branch.
The olive branch. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Those are preserved in our, in mankind's memory.
Well, when it says, God says, I will remember my covenant between me and you, every time there's a rainbow, there's probably a rainbow on earth all the time. So he's always remembering that covenant, which is probably hard for some of these people that are getting flooded out to believe, but...
Yeah, easy question. Does God forget in between?
Well, no, he never forgets.
But he puts the reminder there.
But it's for
first
man.
Covenant.
You want to see my college-age girlfriend?
There she is.
Is it you?
Yeah, it's her.
Better be.
I remember. See? I remember.
Yes. And I used to laugh at my mom and dad when my dad pulled out her picture from when she was in her 20s. Yeah. And she'd say, oh, Russell, I don't look like that anymore. And he does the same thing to me. It's like...
Yeah.
That's it. That's enough.
Yes, you do. Yes, you do.
I think so.
Yeah, yes, you do.
You used to carry pictures like that.
And
this,
yeah.
And, to your dad, she did.
Yeah.
That's the way of it.
To my dad, she did.
Yeah.
That's right.
And...
But it used to aggravate her. So muscle.
Yeah. Since somebody brought it up, I had to do it. Are we ready to stop?
Yeah, I think you are ready to stop.
She's ready for you to stop.